Welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. Today we have with us a very special guest, somebody that has never been on the show before. We have spoken about his brand numerous times. I have managed to see him live on stage in presentations, moderator panels over the last couple of years, and it's been so difficult to carve out just a small fraction of his time because he is so busy with what he is doing with this brand. But it's my honour to introduce to our listeners Mr. George Kern, the CEO of Breitling. How are you doing, sir?
I'm great. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Yeah, no problem at all. I got to see you live in action on stage a couple of times over the last couple of years at Dubai Watch Week, where somebody managed to think you were running the South African division of Breitling. Made a bit of a faux pas on stage with the whole SA thing at the end of the name. And then I got to see you present last year at Geneva Watch Days. And it's a tour de force watching you perform to the crowd and showcase everything that your brand are bringing to market, all the developments, including the ecological things that you've put in place over the last few years since you've taken over. So the first thing we like to do in the show is a wrist check, and you're the guest of honour, so please tell us what you're wearing on the wrist today.
I'm wearing the Chronomat chronograph with a copper dial. I just love this colour combination. I'm a man of colours, and of course also of design. It's a very aesthetic, beautiful product. It is a typical Breitling. As you know, the Chronomat has been launched in the early 1980s, and in particular this what we call the bullet bracelet is particular. It's very comfortable to wear. I think it's probably the Chronomat line is probably the line I wear the most within all the Breitling collections. It's very easy to wear.
Fantastic. Now, as we like to do on this show, we played things up to the wire. Your team in the UK were desperately trying to get a hold of a watch to send across to me because at present, I don't own any Breitling watches. I've looked at a couple of vintage ones, but I haven't pulled the trigger on anything just yet. So literally 10 minutes before we hit record on Zoom, this watch turned up and I know nothing about it. I haven't researched it. So can you tell the listeners what I've got on the wrist?
Well, that's also Chronomat, also with this beautiful bullet bracelet, but it's an automatic GMT and in a smaller size. So I have the 42 millimeter chronograph, and what you got 10 minutes ago is probably the 40 millimeter GMT. I guess this is either the blue, dark blue dial, I cannot see it on the screen, or the gray dial. So it has been, by the way, an incredible success in the market, not only in Asia, which you would suspect because of smaller wrists, but also in Europe. So no, we're very happy about the whole line. The ladies line is also extremely successful. Yeah, the whole line is, after the Navi Timer, the second best performing line within Breitling.
Fantastic. So I will have this for the next few days, so I'll be able to get some good quality images for our Instagram along with the show notes. Now, everybody's heard of Breitling. I've heard of Breitling even before I get into watches, which was only maybe 6 years ago. But maybe perhaps people don't know the history of yourself. So can you give us the George Kern story?
Oh my God. First of all, so I'm 58 years old. I'm trying to do this very quickly. My mother was German. My father was French. I was raised in Germany from zero, if you want, from my birth to 7 years, being 7 years old. Then I moved to France, where I did my bachelor degrees. I started to study political science in France for 3 semesters, and I moved to Switzerland and did business in eastern Switzerland in a town called Zangal. And then I was in fast-moving consumer goods. At that time, the company was called Kraft General Foods, which you probably know from Philadelphia cheese or chocolate like Toblerone and coffee and stuff like that. I was there for 2.5 years, then moved to Tag Heuer. I was at Tag before Louis Vuitton bought it, so when it was still private, owned by the Tag Group, Technique d'Avant-Garde. And after 8 years, when the company was sold, I joined Richemont as, in a way, assistant of one of the board members, Franco Coloni, who was my mentor for many years. And after a year and a half, I was at that time, 36, Richemont bought LMH, Les Manufactures Horlogères, basically 3 brands, Jaeger LeCoultre, AWC, and Langhorne Zöhne. And I was fortunate enough, after that work with that board member, to take over IWC and to build it. And after a couple of years, I was promoted at Richemont to run the whole watch division. But I decided to join another project with private equity, because I was always wanted to be also entrepreneurial in my work, in my investments. And I could invest or co-invest with, at that time, CVC 5 years ago, into Breitling. And as you know, a year ago, we sold a minority stake to Partners Group, which is a Swiss private equity company. And last year's the majority, end of December, the majority to Partners Group. So, but which is great because, you know, we're still independent and privately owned. And we're looking forward to the next chapter of this incredible journey at Breitling.
Well, it has been an incredible journey. You must have just taken over the reins just as I got into things. And when I say I knew nothing about watches, that's a genuine story our listeners know about. But I have seen Breitling transform from the John Travolta airplane days at the beginning right through to the powerhouse it is today. And I've also seen a lot of retail premises appear in the high street, mono boutiques, where you've got the staff, the layout, the presentation, that all works perfectly well. And I've said it in the show many times before, when I go in, the people behind the counter that come out to greet you know everything about the brand and the watches. It isn't just a job for them. And that seems to transcend through the business. So I've got the history of you. The listeners have now heard that. So now tell me the history of Breitling, because this is the first time you've been on the show and we do like to do a little bit of a deep dive.
Well, Breitling was founded in 1884. By Leo Breitling. There were actually three generations of Breitling, Leo, Gastel, and Willy. And in the 70s, Willy had to sell the company. You know, it was a quarter crisis. There were economic difficulties, and he sold the company to the Schneider family. So first, Ernst Schneider took over, who was a pilot and who had a long history in the watch industry. And then his son, Teddy Schneider, took over. But ultimately, Breitling is known for the chronographs. They've been basically inventing, if you want, the wrist chronograph. As you know, there were pocket watches in the old days. And the whole family or the whole Breitlings were always extremely innovative, both in terms of design and in terms of technology. And Breitling is really known for its chronographs and all these functions. They've invented everything what we all know as being chronograph functions with the different pushers on the wrist. So that's Breitling. So when we took over the brand, or when I took over the brand, I also knew only the Breitling of the previous 20 years, which was only a pilot's watch, big, bulky, successful, of course, cool, but very niche in a way. So we were operating in 5% of the market. In particular, we were not doing any business in Asia, or a little business in Asia, and no business really with in the female segment. And then through a connector, a gentleman called Fred Mandelbaum, I'm sure your listeners know him. He's one of the most profiled, I would say, chronograph connectors in the world, in particular of Breitling. I learned much more. So I met him. He's a gentleman living in Vienna, and I learned much more about chronographs and the history of Breitling. And I found out that the history and back catalog, I think we're one of the richest back catalog in the watch industry, was going far beyond only pilot's watches. So this is why we, at that time, said, okay, we are air, land, and sea. So we're not only doing pilot's watches with the Avenger and Navi Tiger or the Super Avi, but also sea with the Super Ocean and the Super Ocean Heritage, which are all historical products, which are all products which were there in the market in the 1950s, and land in particular with the Premier and a kind of, I would say, all-purpose watch like the Chronomat. So we defined these three segments to enlarge our segment. And our offering, today we are a generalistic brand. In a way, I often compare this to the car industry, whereby you, if you go to any brand, you have from SUVs to convertibles, coupes, limousines, etc. And this is basically what we are offering today. We offer a wide range of products, from electronic professional pieces like the Emergency to very traditional products like the Premier with the Duograph, Datograph. And using the whole history of Breitling is helping us or helped us over the last 5 years, and will continue to do so tremendously. So yes, you have seen many changes. Your listeners have seen many changes at Breitling, also visually in the boutiques, etc. I can come on that later. But fundamentally, if you look at the products and our positioning with Air&C, and by the way, funnily enough, there wasn't advertising even in the 50s talking about Air&C at Breitling. we are more faithful to the whole history of writing than what we've ever been. So yes, many changes, certainly, but fundamentally, only building on the roots of this company with its rich history.
Taking what was known and the seedlings and then making them flourish in the modern age is what you guys have definitely done. Well, let's talk about the boutiques just now. You kind of touched on that at the end there. And as I mentioned earlier, it's something that really appealed to me because my friends aren't necessarily into watches. But when I want to introduce them to watches, I can take them to different boutiques and stores. But the Breitling ones, they've got the warmest feel. And the person I bring with me comes away feeling energized about something that they didn't have an interest in before versus various other conglomerates and different boutiques. So how has the changeover been? Because you've launched a massive store in Buchanan Street in Glasgow and you've got one in the new St. James's Quarter in Edinburgh. So what has the philosophy been in bringing those to the high street?
First of all, let's talk about our design codes. When you build a brand or rebuild a brand, you need to define the values of the brand. Obviously, you need to define the positioning of the brand. You need to define strategic statements. Let me walk you through a couple of elements here. So the first element, the values, we define ourselves as neo-luxury. What does it mean, neo-luxury? It means that we try to be inclusive in a way of approachable. We're not in tennis, Formula One, or golf. We are in surfing, we're in triathlon, we are now in rugby. So we do other sports and we have other partnerships than most of the brands. We are in casual, that's the second element, casual luxury. Today, in particular, after COVID, you know, people are much less formal. And when you walk into these boutiques, you see how informal but classy they are, with the brick walls, with the pool tables, with the motorbikes, etc. Brad Pitt, as one of our ambassadors, or Kelly Slater, you know, they are very informal ambassadors. And the third thing, which is super important, is we are a sustainable company. By 2025, more than 50% of the luxury consumption will go to the millennials. And these kids have been raised with the awareness on all the issues happening to our planet. So we fight plastics in the ocean. We've launched a blockchain, not only for authenticity and traceability, but also for to ensure to the consumer transparency of the supply chain. So these, if you want, these are the three elements, casual, inclusive, and sustainable, which are for us the defining elements of neo-luxury. The second element, which is very important, is our design style. So we call ourselves, or we would define it as modern retro. The Chronomat I'm wearing, the one you got, is the, you know, is a typical modern retro watch with a bracelet of the late 70s, early 80s, but produced with the best technology. It's a super comfortable bracelet. But you see, it has a kind of spirit with some retro elements, but it's a very modern and technically advanced product. Same thing for the Navi Timer, or when you look at the design of the Super Ocean, which we launched in summer, which has been tremendous, or which is a tremendous success. You know, we have these designs available from our predecessors, which are brilliant, and we just modernize it. Like Porsche 911 is also a design which is 40, 50 years old, but it has been modernized and it still has a touch. So this modern retro is a very, very, very key element. And you see this, of course, in advertising and in our boutiques. We want to be the cool and relaxed alternative to the more conservative and traditional brands out there.
I've seen your presentations. I've seen what you get dressed up like when you're doing launches, pilot outfits and all kinds of things. So definitely having that modern casual flair with a luxury product underneath, it works, and it works very, very well. You brought up a couple of points there. You mentioned motorcycles in the boutiques, and I remember a launch last year with Triumph.
Yeah.
How did that come to be? Because that was just a massive success in my eyes.
No, it was incredible. And it's funny because Triumph has been approached by many watch brands. And actually, when we talked to them, they said immediately yes. Because first of all, obviously, they love our brand. Second, they have also this look, you know, this modern retro look, these roots. It's a very similar company to ours. And yes, indeed, we did a limited series and a broader series available to all customers. And we did limited Triumph motorbikes series in ice blue. When we said, what do you think about, you know, this ice blue color for the Triumphs, they loved it. And we did and designed that motorbike together. And now we're working on the second motorbike with second watch, which will be slightly more modern. But it has been a tremendous success. And of course, all our partners, Triumph, Deus Ex Machina, for instance, are all partners which we believe are less obvious to the public, but fitting extremely well our brand. And as I said earlier, we want to be cooler and relaxer than our competitors. And when I look at the social media engagement we have versus the social media engagement our competitors have with, I mean, more obvious brands, we beat them. So it shows that, yes, they receive these partnerships very well. So we're very happy with Triumph.
I got to see them over in Edinburgh last year, and I was amazed. It was on display in the window, and it drew my attention. I went inside, got to try it out. And again, I stuck photos on our Instagram, and it got a great reception. And people were actually asking, where'd I get this? Where'd I get this? Because they'd been looking for it. So that was one of the standouts. Another thing you mentioned there was the Super Ocean series last year, where you brought in all these different colorways, slightly different shaped bezels and rehots. How did that come to be? And what's the reception been like with the public there?
You know, it's very, very, very difficult to make a diving watch, because there's one big elephant in the room dominating that segment and these diving watch design. And I told my team, let's find something. And we have in our collection from the 1950s, 60s, a product called Slow Motion. It's a product called Slow Motion, which probably the connectors or the knowledgeable, you know, listeners know. And what is particular is what we call the Rio. So it's a space between the dial and the case where you have different indications. And that Rio, what we call the Rio, it's extremely large. And then you have this ceramic bezel, and you have very particular hands, very, very particular hands. Again, a little bit in that style, modern retro. And yes, we had a very particular design based on this Slow Motion. And then we wanted to bring color to the game, because at the end of the day, it's a summer watch. It's, it's a diving watch. And we launched all these, blues and greens and turquoise colored dials. A colleague of yours, a journalist, called us the Happy Days. You'll remember, we probably remember this series, the Happy Days brand. And yes, we want to be a positive brand, not only cool and relaxed, but through innovative colors, different colors, away from the classic black, away also from the classic dark blue, bringing in some life into the game.
Well, that again seemed to work wonders and was a departure from not only what you guys have had and been known for, but like you say, the other big players that constantly change it by 1 millimeter here and there. Obviously, the massive big watch anybody talks about when they think of Breitling is the Navi Timer. And we've never had someone really talk about that on the show before. And you're here, so let's utilize your talents. Can you give us the history of the Navi Timer and how you guys have brought that bang up to date as well?
The key element of the Navi Timer is the sliding rule. You know, that mathematic sliding rule, which was used or which can be used to calculate speed, to calculate gas consumption, etc., etc. And it was a calculator. By the way, it was first introduced on the Chronomat and later on the Navi Timer. We position that watch as the ultimate, well, it's an icon, first of all, because of the sliding rule in terms of design. Totally recognizable. Obviously, nobody is going to use that sliding rule today or just for fun, because it's quite complicated. But today, pilots have different instruments. But still, all these watches, if you look at the watch industry, all watches have a functionality which might be invented 50, 60, 70 years ago, and which was even diving watches or anti-magnetic watches, which were important at that time for doctors, for anti-magnetism, or what have you. And today, you still keep these functions because they're part of the design. You take that sliding rule away, you lose the character of the watch. So fundamentally, we have, it's a watch which was used very much in civil aviation. So we have the AVI or Super AVI as the I would say, the Second World War type of pilot's watch, you know, with the Warhawk, with the Mosquito, with the Corsair, etc. So we have different names of very famous planes of the Second World War, which is part also of the history of Breitling. Then we have the civil aviation watch, the Navi Tiger of the 60s and 70s, where Breitling was one of the major partner of major airlines in the world. And then we have modern aviation with the Avenger, which is very much the tough type of pilot's watch. But the Navi Tiger is clearly positioned as and was used very much by civil aviations in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
And how have you managed to take that through the ages to where it is today? Because it's still the one everybody talks about when they mention Breitling.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you have a couple, you have 10, 15 real icons in the watch industry. And the Navi Tiger is definitely one of these ultimate icons of the watch industry. And I think everybody should wear, and if you're a collector, everybody should have a Navi Tiger. So, but there have been, since its birth, there have been probably 20, 25 different models. And Fred Mandelbaum, you know, our walking encyclopedia, so on, you can find him on a Watch Fred, on Instagram, would be able to explain to you. And by the way, we've published a book, huh, which is available on the Navi Tiger. So we would be in a better position to explain a little bit the background. But we looked into the archives, and there's one watch of the 60s I liked very much, which was Fletcher. Because same thing, you know, the watch, when we took over the brand, was quite high. And I thought we could make it Fletcher, but we had to totally rebuild the case, totally review the way we integrate the sliding rule into the case with the pushers, etc. I think today the watch versus 5 years ago is less sporty, more chic, a little bit more elegant, but keeping definitely the character of what it was initially.
And another thing that obviously is quite topical at the moment is the whole in-house movement debate. And you guys have got the technology that people across the world seem to want to get a hold of.
As I mentioned at the beginning of our talk, we are known for our chronographs. And I would, and forgive me if I say that, as a CEO of Breitling, I would say we have the best chronograph in the market, what we call the B01. It has been in the market, since 15 years or something. The quality is amazing. The performance is amazing. We never had any problem. We will use that chronograph more and more in all our watches. Ultimately, we want to be only in-house movements, and therefore, we will use that B01 in different executions throughout all our chronograph product offering, if you want. And this is not a secret. We're also working now on our in-house automatic movement, which most probably will be launched by next year. So as I said, ultimately, we want to be, except for the quartz or electronic watches, we have in our professional watch field, we want to be close to 100% in-house movements.
Makes sense. And when I saw you for the second time, which was last year's at Geneva Watch Days, the presentation on stage with yourself and the other co-hosts was all about sustainability. And we've talked about Breitling for years because you were one of the first groups to come together, reduce packaging and actually talk about things over and above some of the independents that we've had on the show before. So how has that been? It must have been quite a difficult thing with such a large organization that's been going for so long to turn the ship around and to actually start changing things.
It's a key element or key pillar of our values. We are in the scope of a worldwide economy, a very small company. We cannot change the world. We cannot, you know, stop PET bottles and stuff. But I always say we need to do the maximum we can in our sphere of influence to make out of this planet a better place to live. So what do? We are dramatically reducing our CO2 footprints. We indeed have changed our packaging. We're in watches. We're not selling packaging. sometimes the journalists ask me, why do you do this? Because we're selling watches. We're not selling packaging. And anyway, people are throwing away packaging. I don't know how you do it, but when I buy shoes or sneakers or whatever, I don't want packaging. I think it's something we really don't need. And as I said, here we have to be very modern in an industry which is very old, where technology for the product hasn't changed since 200 or 250 years. We have a blockchain, we have all the information, we have a kind of digital passport which is available for our consumers. We have in the packaging then, a travel pouch, all this in a concept of circular ecology. So not only it's produced with PET bottles, but it can be recycled again into other products made out of PET. We have partnership with Ocean Conservancy to fight plastic in the oceans. We are sourcing our gold from a secured mine in Colombia, where the flora and fauna is protected, where the communities are looked after. We have decided, which was a kind of surprise for many people, we have decided to go into lab-grown diamonds. We don't want to be involved with blood diamonds. We don't want to be involved in destroying environments. We don't want to be involved with child work, et cetera, et cetera. So having lab-grown diamonds, which, by the way, have exactly the same chemical components, which are of exactly the same quality of mined diamonds, we decided to go for it. And I mentioned earlier that by 2025, more than 50% of our customer base will be millennials. And trust me, this product, what we call Origin, so with this gold coming from that protected mine or this artisanal mine, and with the diamonds, lab-grown diamonds produced with sustainable energy, we have a product which is very, very successful. And I'm convinced that in the coming years, many producers, many watch manufacturers will go the same way. So, I mean, it's just a decision. You just have to take a decision. There's nothing else to do. Take a decision to be sustainable and just do it, right? And of course, you always have people criticizing, but this is key element of our value, a set of values. And we wouldn't be as successful if this wouldn't be recognized as a positive element.
I remember I did an Instagram live when you had first launched the new packaging. I did it with Barbara Palumbo, What's on Her Wrist from the States. And we got through the new boxes, which compared to the boxes that I get my watches in from different brands, I picked up a Snoopy at the end of last year and it arrived in a crate. Now I've got to find a place to store that, because as you know and everybody else knows, when you go to resell a watch, if you decide to do so, everybody wants the original box, the original packaging. If you're a collector, suddenly you've got massive amounts of space taken up in the attic, in the garage or wherever. So having something that is literally the size of a watch roll that you can put anywhere is a fantastic thing, and you're cutting down on the fact somebody might need to buy a travel roll or a miniature watch box to take with them.
Just as an anecdote, we obviously offer, because you cannot force customers to follow you on everything you're doing, so we offer to customers to order the classic packaging. They can still do it. Ah. Again, we don't force them to do that, but that environmentally friendly packaging is a basis. Okay. But then when you order that packaging, we invite that customer to offset the CO2 footprint by investing also for free, I mean, no obligation, into an NGO called Sugi, which is basically planting trees. When we presented the whole thing to retailers, people were extremely critical, said this will not work. Guess how, what is the percentage of customers asking for the traditional packaging?
I have no idea. Hit me with it.
It's less than 1%.
Wow.
So it's really sometimes we use traditional packaging because we have a corporate deal or what have you. But the normal customer, a normal Breitling customer is not asking for the traditional packaging. Because in a way, we explained it at point of sale. And it's quite embarrassing to say, no, I don't want an environmental a friendly packaging. Give me the old stuff, which is killing trees and others. So it's very limited, and it works very well. So we have a different approach with both the blockchain and the sourcing of our materials, raw materials, and also with our packaging and many other things we do in the company.
Well, that's great to hear. And like I said, if I'm buying a watch, yes, I would like to have the original packaging. But if that brand decides to use something that is small and easily put away, all the better. Because if I do decide in future to upgrade, I've got the original packaging there. You talk about millennials, you've mentioned that quite a few times, and I noticed that the marketing and the advertising messages change significantly since you've taken over the reins with the company. You've brought on Brad Pitt, you've got Charlize Theron and various other people. How has that marketing message changed along with the brand ambassadors? What is the ethos behind using those people to bring the message to the public?
I think that the major difference in advertising is the fact that we work with squads. So we don't work with one single ambassador in an advertising, for instance. We work with three people. So you were mentioning, for instance, what we call the cinema squad with Charlize Theron, Brad Pitt, Adam Driver. But obviously, we have many more squads. We have a surface squad with Kelly Stages and Sally Fitzgibbons. I mean, we have, you know, two women, one man. We have what we call a spotlight squad with Misty Copeland, for instance, the ballet dancer, also with Charlize Theron for the females' watches. We have an explorer squad. So we have different squads for different themes or different product groups. And the beauty of it is that graphically, do you differentiate yourself versus the others? Second, it's very flexible because you can exchange. You know, you can have one man to two women or two women, one man. You can mix our ambassadors depending on what kind of message you want to send. For me, it's an endless campaign. And for me, a group is always better than an individual. So I think there's a huge difference, both in terms of graphics, because three people in an ad is very different from one. I doubt that if you would ask anybody in the streets of Glasgow, okay, name me the ambassador of brand ABC, they would be able to mention them. Whilst graphically, only graphically, you recognize our advertising. And then, as I said, it's very flexible. And then we use, you know, celebrities which are very famous, like Brad Pitt. But we have also, you know, ambassadors which are much less known, but which are the leaders in their field. You know, they're number one in their field. And if you're not interested in ballet, you might Google Misty Copeland and find out how fantastic this woman is and how greatly she's supporting and representing the values of our brand. So it's not about celebrities for the sake of celebrities. It's really, number one, a different look, a little bit also in this mono neutral type of pictures. The first round of pictures we did with Peter Lindbergh, a very famous German photographer who unfortunately died. We can send out different messages. We're totally flexible in the way we do it. And we can tell different stories. And at the end of the day, also through advertising, we're telling stories.
That makes complete sense. And I'm thinking about Brad Pitt as you're explaining there and how Breitling is a little bit like Brad Pitt. It's been there for years and years. It's respected, but it's also very popular in the current day. Everybody knows about it. Everybody respects it. So that's a good tie-in. And we're recording this show just ahead of a new release. We have got some hot news to talk about today because this is a day of launch, and that again is to do with something in the UK. So would you like to explain to listeners why we've decided today is the best day to put this podcast out?
As I mentioned earlier, we're not, you know, in the classic sports people would associate a luxury company with. I mentioned surfing, but funnily enough, many companies are going into surfing since we went into surfing. We are in triathlon, we are in cycling, and we've decided last year to become the official timekeeper of the Six Nations tournaments. And of course, it's very UK, in a way, UK driven. You have Wales, you have Scotland, you have England, etc. You have obviously Italy, you have France. It's a totally different community. Today, it's also about community. You know, you have a surfers community, you have a rugby community, you have a soccer community, you have a different communities. And we just love, I've been, as I mentioned, living in France for a couple of years. I haven't been living in France, but rugby is very, very strong in France. It's a very strong sport. But of course, it's major also in the UK, in obviously in Scotland, Wales, etc. And we're very happy not only to be associated with the Six Nations tournament. You will see our logos on screen. You will see the advertising in the stadium, etc. And we've been launching one limited series, 150 pieces by participants. So six times 150 pieces with the colors and the logos of each team. So you have the Wales limited series, you have the England limited series, you have the France limited series, 150 pieces. So it's on the, exactly on the watch I'm wearing, by the way, on the Chronomat 42 millimeter. And we have beautiful engravement. First of all, the colors, we have the beautiful logos on the dial and on the open case back.
Well, that is fantastic. That brings us almost bang up to date with everything. But I suppose it would be remiss of me if I didn't ask, what does 2023 hold for Breitling? What can you tell us about? Because we're only in January. We've got another 11 months to go and you guys don't rest in your laurels.
No, we have really a couple of fantastic and very exciting launches. We always rework products. You always have to modernize and update products. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to have many initiatives on the top time and on the premier. And for the rest of the year, I prefer to be quiet and really concentrate on the Chronomat we're launching today with the Six Nations tournament.
And are there any big events happening this year? Are you going to be in attendance at the next Dubai Watch Week, commanding the stage as always?
Yeah, I mean, of course, we will be in Dubai, yes, yes. And we are at the Geneva Watch Days. There are many colleagues of ours being present and we want to support the fair. We don't believe in fair as a selling platform because we sell the products. During the year, we have subsidiaries and teams all over the world, so we don't really need fairs to sell a product, neither to talk to journalists. And ultimately, today, with a couple of clicks, you communicate to millions of people, to your customers. So we participate in these two fairs and we'll see what will happen to other fairs in the world and if we can plug or want to plug in or not.
Excellent. That's the way to do it. And I remember it was Breitling that kind of led the charge with the exodus from Baselworld. And look where that is now. So you guys seem to know what you're doing when it comes to events across the planet. I will say again, thank you very much for spending the time with me today and bringing the show to the listeners. It's the first time you've been on and hopefully in the future you can return to inform us and bring us up to speed on later developments throughout the years. For anyone that has no clue, how do they find out more about Breitling, what you're up to and the different squads? What's the best place for them to check out?
Yeah, Instagram, you can follow me, you can follow obviously Breitling. But as you mentioned earlier, I think our boutiques are, we have now 210 boutiques around the world. In Scotland, as you said, we have two. And this is a great place to see the products. Most of the watches are available. Of course, we are also short of products like many other brands. But yeah, social media to get the information and the boutiques to touch and feel the product.
And a hearty recommendation from myself to go in if you're in Scotland, England or anywhere else across the world, because we've got another member of the team who actually works in a Breitling boutique over in America and her place looks just as good as the ones here in Scotland. So definitely pop in if you have one nearby or make the journey because it is worth your time. So thank you very much for joining me on the show today. Check out the show notes for images, details of all the releases, all the historic items and everything that we've chatted about. That will give you links to the Instagram, to the websites, locations for different boutiques and links to perhaps the previous video I did many years ago with Barbara Palumbo on Breitling and ecological packaging. And while you're on the internet and checking out Instagram, be sure to follow us at Scottish Watches. We post all kinds of updates, pictures, news, reviews, previews, and anything that a watch enthusiast would like to check out during the week, on their lunch hour or on their tea break. Our home on the internet is www.scottishwatches.co.uk and you can find more of the same there, just in a slightly lengthier format. And if you've got ideas, comments, suggestions, feedback, positive or negative, be sure to drop us an email. Don't DM us, they do get lost. And that email address is info@scottishwatches.co.uk. So thank you for joining me today and we'll catch you guys again soon.
Thank you, Ricky.
No.